It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
The compromise we've reached will ensure that for the first time in years, our armed forces will have more of the resources they need to keep America safe.
The two-year budget deal provides $165 billion more for the military, $131 billion more for domestic programs, a debt ceiling increase through March 2019, disaster relief funding for hurricane and wildfire victims, keeping the government open through March 23rd.
The budget deal doesn't have everything Democrats want. It doesn't have everything Republicans want. But it has a great deal of what the American people want. After months of legislative logjams, this budget deal is a genuine breakthrough.
It does not include anything for the so-called Dreamers, young people brought to this country illegally by their parents. And even though Democratic leader Nancy Pelosi was a part of the negotiations, she spent hours on the House floor demanding a promise from Speaker Ryan on DACA.
The package really does nothing to advance a bipartisan legislation to protect Dreamers in the House. Without a commitment from Speaker Ryan, comparable to the commitment from Leader McConnell, this package cannot have my support.
That's the first part of Mike Emanuel's report on the budget deal that the Senate made last night. By the way, it is not a done deal. And I'm going to spend quite a bit of time this morning in this segment, at least, talking about this to explain to you why Chuck Schumer was so happy. But let's listen to the rest of Mike Emanuel's report before I do that.
A spokeswoman for House Speaker Paul Ryan says he, quote, has already repeatedly stated, we intend to do a DACA and immigration reform bill, one that the president supports. At the White House, Press Secretary Sarah Sanders agreed immigration should be separate.
We've made clear that the budget deal should be a budget deal and that members of Congress, like Nancy Pelosi, should not hold our military hostage over a separate issue. We've laid out what we would like to see in immigration legislation, and I think it's something that Nancy Pelosi should support.
And the Secretary of Defense urged lawmakers to get it done.
In a world awash in change with increasing threats, there is no room for complacency. Failure to implement or fund the 2018 National Defense Strategy will leave us with a force that could dominate the last war, yet be irrelevant to tomorrow's security.
Yet the leader of the Conservative House Freedom Caucus says he cannot back the surge in spending.
Obviously, I consider the president a close personal friend, and even if he called me and asked me to vote for this, I'm afraid the answer would still be no. At this point, I think it's fiscally irresponsible to support it.
Republican sources admit Democrats had some significant leverage on spending because they need at least 9 Democrats in order to pass a budget in the Senate.
All right. So there you go. What's happened is the Senate has passed this bill, which I'm going to describe to you. They are rejoicing, taking a victory lap. Chuck Schumer is certainly taking a victory lap, and I'll explain to you why in just a second. Mitch McConnell is claiming, oh, this is a great bill. This is a great. Well, is it a great bill? Not so much. You heard Mark Meadows weighing in saying, even if the president calls me, we can't support this bill. Are they just troublemakers, the members of the Freedom Caucus? Are they our champions? Well, you know, I believe the latter, and I'm going to tell you why. I'm going to give you some details as best I can this morning. Meanwhile, Nancy Pelosi stood on the floor of the House for hours, you know, making her stand on behalf of DACA. She was appalled that DACA was not included in the bill. I might as well have thrown it in. I'm not sure why Mitch McConnell didn't, because they gave the Democrats everything else they wanted, so they might as well have thrown that in. But Mitch McConnell has promised next week, they'll get to it, not to worry. So that'll be a fight that we'll talk about next week. But for today, tonight at midnight, the spending bill, something has to be provided to fund the government. You heard Secretary Mattis say what he did, talking about, oh, this is important spending. But remember that Secretary Mattis is not a conservative. He was the pick of Hillary Clinton also. He would have been the pick for Hillary Clinton. So I would say that Secretary Mattis, also the person who is on the bandwagon to allow transgenders in the military, this is the man speaking to you. So just saying, I recognize that he's over our Defense Department, but not necessarily a trustworthy mouthpiece. And I'm going to tell you, report to you from people that I think are trustworthy mouthpieces. Let me just read a few comments, off-the-cuff comments from people on the front lines. It's $131 billion in additional domestic spending at a time of record unemployment. It is insane. It's around $165 billion in new defense spending. It's gluttony by the Pentagon. This undoes all of the wins on the budget over the last 6 years because it moves the baselines way up and makes it next to impossible to ever balance the budget. And the Republicans got nothing from the Democrats on it. Nothing. Okay, so that's one comment. The other comment, it's a runaway crack addict spending bill. While defense needed to go up somewhat, domestic needed to be cut. We can't afford to borrow money, more money, to keep spending like this. The bill also ups the credit limit again. There's the reason why it's called a debt limit. And then the other comment was individual tax cuts that we are all, the Republicans are crooning about, and rightfully so. That's a good thing, right? They're only established for 10 years, and then they go away unless they're renewed. So guess what's going to happen in 10 years when they have added, and in this budget, they add $1 trillion more dollars in debt. $1 trillion more dollars. Another comment, this is an outrageously bad bill, outrageous spending levels with the overwhelming majority of it not paid for. Now, let me get into the nuts and bolts of what's in this bill, and I'll tell you right up front that I'm using the Daily Signal from Heritage Foundation. Just want to make sure that's the right outlet here. Yeah, it's the Daily Signal. I'm going to share with you that what they list is five things to know about Congress's latest budget-busting deal. All right, so it does, listen, there's no question our defense spending needs to go up. There's no question that we need to rebuild our military. It is in shambles. It's been so underfunded. You know, and they had a report, what, this week that they're missing $700 billion, something like that. You think that the shenanigans of the Obama administration didn't feed over into the Pentagon? The Pentagon has become, remember that the left always uses these lofty labeled spending packages to fuel their side. The big shovel-ready jobs package, whatever the name of that was. Remember, nothing happened. No improvements. Hardly anything happened in the United States using those billions of dollars that were allegedly spent under Barack Obama. Remember his name being, you know, this was the big thing that President Barack Obama was going to do for the country was rebuild, and all this money went into it. But then nothing really happened. You know where the money went? The money went to leftist groups. This is how the game is played. They know how to move the money around, and it did not go to the American people, and I suspect that's what's happened at the Pentagon as well. But let me just go back to this. Yes, so the Pentagon, of the actual military, our guys, our troops, our pilots, the planes, the ships, they need money. There's no question about that. So it's a much-needed boost to defense spending. But over the next 2 years, it would raise the Budget Control Act caps by $296 billion, with only a third of it being paid for. So the agreement would raise spending to $153 billion more than the previous two budget deals combined. So stay with me for a second. Remember the last two budget deals they did? I told you what last summer, the first time Mitch McConnell, after President Trump had been elected, and he gave the Democrats everything they wanted, everything. So hear this again. This agreement would raise spending by $153 billion more than the previous two budget deals combined. It would guarantee that about $1 trillion is added to the debt this year and is an affront to any remaining hope of fiscal responsibility. So it goes on to say, defense spending has been hit particularly hard by the Budget Control Act. While comprising only around 15% of the federal budget, it has absorbed half of the law's cuts. Over the next 2 years, this agreement would increase base defense spending by $165 billion. This is a much-needed investment in our military's readiness and preparedness capabilities and would put defense funding back on the right path. But here's part two. The deal also allows for about $70 billion in overseas contingency operations, which are not subject to the budget caps. While some of these funds would probably be used to fight ongoing conflicts around the globe, tens of billions of dollars would be used to prop up base, defense, and State Department budgets. So you see how this works? $70 billion in this broad category of overseas contingency operations going to the State Department. It's not defense, not active defense, not guns and equipment and ships and planes, but State Department hidden in that, $70 billion. It increases non-defense caps, that's domestic spending, everything that's not defense, by $131 billion. This agreement sets 2018 non-defense spending $117 billion higher than President Donald Trump's request. It's 70% higher than any two-year non-defense increase ever requested by President Barack Obama. Did you catch that? All right, again, this is domestic spending. This is why Chuck Schumer is just, this is a very good deal. This is a very good compromise. This is actually good for the American people. Actually good for the left. The agreement sets a 2018 non-defense spending, domestic spending, $117 billion higher than President Donald Trump's request. It's 70% higher than any two-year non-defense increase ever requested by Barack Obama. All right, so the writer of this piece, Daily Signal, says, by the way, you've heard, I've shared with you several other voices whose names you don't know, but people on the inside who have similar thoughts about this, very concerned, alarmed. Within the federal budget, there are hundreds of agencies and programs competing for limited resources. Congress should use this budget process to carefully examine those programs, evaluate, and prioritize them based on merit, instead of just throwing billions more dollars at them, which is what they did. And so then it goes on. It says that in those pay spending, they fail to pay for them. They don't make any attempt to pay for the increase in spending that they just provided for. Congress did make the effort to pay for increased spending with reforms to mandatory programs such as Medicaid and Federal Employment Health Benefits Program and by extending mandatory sequestration. But in the latest deal, Congress has completely abandoned even the appearance of fiscal responsibility. The $296 billion in new spending provided by this bill, only about $100 billion is being paid for. And it relies mainly on budget gimmicks for these paltry offsets. Let me go down to some more here. The plan includes $80 to $90 billion in disaster relief fund for ongoing hurricane and wildfire efforts. This is on top of the more than $36 billion in uncapped spending that has already been appropriated for disaster relief this year. I wonder who might line up to get that money. Just asking. You think it's the people, you know, in Texas who suffered this year? You think it's the people in other disaster areas? You know, I don't know. I mean, it's kind of like this big slush fund, isn't it? So, and it suspends the debt limit until 2019. So, in other words, they can just spend like drunken sailors, and that's exactly what they are doing. There's a lot more to say about it. We'll put this article on our Facebook page so that you can read and share it. Oh, there's so many more things I wanted to tell you. Bottom line is, the good men, and they are all men, in the Freedom Caucus need our help. And the bad men, who are all the others, need us to hear our voices today. I would suggest, if you're concerned about this the way I am, that we ring out the phones in Congress. Your congressman needs to be called, because that's where it goes today, the House of Representatives. We do not want them to pass this bill, or the White House, too. This is a very bad bill for all the reasons I've said, increasing our debt by $1 trillion under a Republican president, a Republican Senate, a Republican House. In fact, let me read this last statement. We just beat Democrats over shutting down the government while the GOP was fighting for military spending. We have the upper hand in public polls. We control the House. Why are we caving to Schumer? Big spending demands now. Please call your congressman. Ask them to oppose this.
Here's some great News. If you missed the deadline to sign up for health insurance, or more importantly, if you signed up for a plan that you're just not happy with, you still have a choice. It's called MediShare. MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing program that's been around for 25 years, and they have hundreds of thousands of members all across the country. And get this, over the years, MediShare members have shared more than $1 billion of each other's medical bills. Best of all, you could save a lot of money with MediShare. The typical savings for a family is about $500 a month. Your savings could be more or less, but think about what you could do with that extra money. Think you're stuck with a high-cost health plan that doesn't have a lot to offer? Well, think again. You can join MediShare anytime, so call them today and check it out. Here's the number to find out more, and there's no pressure. They're super easy to talk to. 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23. 855-PSALM-23.
Are you a responsible person who finds yourself growing deeper and deeper in credit card debt and you're not sure how to fix the problem? Then get ready for a toll-free number that will put you on a path to financial recovery. Trinity Debt Management is a nonprofit organization that will consolidate your accounts into one easy-to-manage monthly payment. Put a stop to late fees and over-limit charges and reduce your interest rates by as much as 60%. You'll save thousands and become debt-free for keeps. It's not a loan. It's a smart way to relieve your stress, meet your obligations, and preserve your self-respect. If your debt has you down, we should talk. Gather up your bills and call this toll-free number for a free, no-obligation debt analysis. 1-800-788-1813. That's 1-800-788-1813. If you're in debt and you need help, call Trinity at 1-800-788-1813.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Paul Kizito. I'm a junior biology major here at Truett McConnell, and I came from Uganda. What I love about TMU is the one, number one, is the heart of, you know, of just the school and the love for God, for Christ. You can see it once you step on the campus. Like, you can see it's best, like, the foundation for TMU is Christianity.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
A new batch of text messages between a disgraced FBI investigator and his lover raise serious questions about what former President Obama knew about the investigation into Hillary Clinton's secret email server. Fox News exclusively obtained the messages between Peter Strzok and Lisa Page. The text message in question is chilling. POTUS wants to know everything we are doing. That message was sent on September 2, 2016. However, in April of that year, President Obama told Fox News he was staying out of the FBI investigation. It really does make you wonder, did the Obama administration weaponize the FBI and the Justice Department? These latest text messages should raise serious questions. Most pressing, did the Obama administration try to influence the outcome of the Hillary Clinton email scandal? I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. You know, there was another article that I didn't get to, but I want to. It's an editorial in the Wall Street Journal this morning called The Guns and Butter Budget. And the byline is Democrats exact a high price for agreeing to boost the military. This is what it says. The annual budget deficit is cruising toward a cool $1 trillion. Yet some Republicans are flirting with adding another new entitlement called paid family leave. The GOP's best hope is that tax reform can deliver at least 3% growth and delay the fiscal reckoning. Republicans have to handle the urgent task of rebuilding the military in a dangerous world, but one certainty. Entitlement reform must happen, or we'll be defending ourselves against Kim Jong-un's nuclear missiles with Medicare checks. All right, so there's a lot more to say, but I've asked you, and I'm just telling you, asking you, if you agree and you are concerned, the men that are standing against this budget, there's just a paltry few of them in the Freedom Caucus, and I don't know how many of them are going to oppose it. I know Mark Meadows, Jim Jordan, and others that you hear often are opposing it because it is out-of-control spending, raising our debt $1 trillion in 1 year. They need your support, and that means if you can call your congressman and tell them how you feel about this, that would be very helpful to them. I would call the local district office. I wouldn't call the Washington office. It's easier to reach them in their district. It's more personal. And so ask them not to vote for this bill. This is a bad bill. And we're going to put this Wall Street Journal article on our Facebook page. We'll put the Daily Signal article from Heritage so that you can access that and educate yourself and underline some things. Always be respectful. But those calls need to be made. Those guys are under such pressure. It's just enormous. And they need our support. That's one of the reasons I stay in this fight. I see them, and I cannot abandon the hard work and the way they lay it on the line almost every day. All right, so I hope you'll do your part to help them. Well, speaking of Congress, our next guest is running for Congress, and one might ask, why would a good man do this right now, given the pressures I've just described? And that was just a very quick description of what actually happens on Capitol Hill. But Chip Roy is throwing his hat in the ring in the Texas District 21. They have the first primary of any states this year. It's in March. Let me just say that Chip is a former federal prosecutor in the Eastern District of Texas. He was a staff director for Senator John Cornyn, senior counsel to the Senate Judiciary Committee, advisor to Governor Rick Perry, chief of staff for Senator Cruz. That's how I know Chip. And a first assistant to Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton, and I could go on and on, but he comes to this, at least the aspirations for this job, with a great resume. Chip, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me on. It's really a great honor to be able to join your show, and thanks for what you do by putting all the good information out there for your listeners.
Chip, it's real. It's very different, isn't it, to be chief of staff and then try to be candidate? How would you describe those differences?
Well, it's interesting you say that. I have been worked for a number of statewide officials, and they've all been, you know, great Texans that I've had an honor to work for. But putting yourself out there, it's quite different, and responding to questions and you know, running a campaign, especially in a complex environment like we're dealing with right now. But you know, the opportunities right now are significant to be able to try to provide reinforcement to not just the president, but the folks in Washington who are, you rattled off a few of them, who are standing up for us. It's unfortunately a fairly small group, a select few, who are honoring their commitments to fight for the people throughout this country who have sent them there. And we're going to see this battle unfold in this budget process that we're dealing with right now, in this ridiculous spending bill. But that's why I'm looking to go to Washington, is because we've got to send reinforcements to the good guys up there who are standing up for the people.
Chip, I tell my listeners, not every day, but almost, that 2018, the elections are so important, maybe in some ways as important as the 2016 presidential race and election, because the forces on the left, they never silence. They just go underground and they regroup and they pour millions of dollars, and they have a plan. They have a plan for Texas. They have a plan for Georgia. They have a plan for North Carolina. They've already flipped Virginia. And Texas is right in the center of their scope. So, Chip, you are in Austin, your District 21 to San Antonio. What's happening, for instance, in your district in that regard?
Well, look, I think the Democrats are targeting not just Texas, but as you point out, a number of states and districts around the country under the belief that they can turn Texas blue. And the fact of the matter is that if we don't do our job as conservatives and govern effectively and reflect the values of the people across this country and that, frankly, honor our commitments that we campaign upon in terms of limited government and reducing spending and being responsible, then we're going to open up the door wide for Democrats to have an opportunity. At the same time, Democrats' general playbook is so far out of lockstep with so many Texans. We don't believe that they've got a good, firm grounding to stand upon, given how badly the Democratic Party is out of step with them. And we're going to keep marching forward and doing what we need to do to take our message of limited constitutional government and protect Texas from turning blue.
Chip, this is Lamar Smith is leaving Congress, and this will be his seat. Is it safe to say that this particular seat is Republican? My understanding is it's that district is being targeted by the Democrats as well, specifically.
It's a strong district. It has been Republican for quite a long time. I would state it even differently. It's a conservative district of Texans that I think reflects fairly significantly the overall values of Texas. But roughly a 58-42, 60-40 GOP-leaning district. But look, we don't take anything for granted. I mean, right now we're focused on the primary election. It's a crowded field of 18 candidates, if you can believe it. A number of different folks getting in the race. And so we're focused like a laser on the primary on March 6th. and on the early voting that starts, believe it or not, on February 20th. And I think that I have a unique set of qualifications that would allow me to hit the ground running, to take on the swamp head on, and to join forces and stand side by side again with Mike Lee and Ted Cruz and the House Freedom Caucus, all of whom have endorsed me in my race for this 21st congressional seat in Texas.
Chip, are there 18 candidates for the Republican nomination?
There are, if you can believe it. Yes, it makes for very, very interesting forums when we go around the district and talk to folks in town halls and in the various settings. Although your listeners will appreciate that in the history, in 1961, when John Tower ran for Senate in Texas for the open seat when Lyndon Johnson went to the White House, there were 71 in the field. So 18 seems fairly trivial, but no, it's a crowded field.
Well, I do think that it has to be said that one of the qualifications that you have is you know the system in D.C., and that's when you're serving in the House, you know, there's such a learning curve. There's only 2 years. You know, the term, I don't need to tell you, the term is 2 years, and by the time you've finally gotten your feet, you know, grounded on rules and regulations and the dreaded, sordid business of Washington, you know, you only have a little bit of time left, and then you have to worry about being reelected. That's one of the downsides, I know, of being a member of Congress. But let me ask you, I'm going to ask you again, because you alluded to it, but really, honestly, Chip, why would a good man like you want to put yourself through this?
Well, it is a good question, and it's a question I get from the people that I care about and care about me. At the end of the day, you and I have spoken before. When I was serving for Governor Perry, I happened to go through a battle with Hodgkin's lymphoma. Went through that in August of 2011, 5 or 6 months. I mean, you come out the other end of that, and you realize what the good Lord has given you and what you have to preserve. And I want to make sure that we pass down a country to my children who are 8 and 6 years old that is better than the one I inherited. So I feel compelled, if called, to get back up to Washington with the skill set that I have been, I'll say blessed with, some might joke and say cursed with, of having some fairly deep understanding of the way Washington, well, I was going to say works, but really doesn't work. And I know the pitfalls, I know who to team up with, and there are playbooks that we can run to truly win this fight. And you know, I know that there's a lot of frustrations with the continued efforts to spend money. This bill is an abomination that we're seeing being put forward today by Senate leadership on both sides of the aisle. And, you know, we need to oppose that. But look, we're winning the overall fight. If you look at the last 10 years, electing Mike Lee instead of Bob Bennett, electing Rand Paul instead of Trey Grayson, electing Marco Rubio instead of Charlie Crist, Ted Cruz instead of David Dewhurst, these were all fights on the Republican side where we've gotten true fighters into the Congress, and then the Tea Party wave gave us the Freedom Caucus. So we've got the people up there fighting for us are because the people have spoken and said we want people up there representing our values. And that has led to the election of Donald Trump and at least a glimmer of hope right now that we can peel back the administrative state and the size and scope of Washington. But we've got to send more people up there. And the American, more important than that, the American people have got to stand up and demand that we get responsible governance, lower spending, and reduce the size and scope of government.
Hey, Chip, you know, I don't need to tell you that the House has their own fund for helping candidates. And generally speaking, in the last, since Boehner was Speaker of the House at least, that money has gone to help establishment candidates, people that will do the bidding of leadership. That certainly happened under Boehner, and I think it certainly happened under Ryan. They've sort of dried up the well when it came to Freedom Caucus members. So I kind of set you up with this, and I didn't mean to. I actually just wanted to know what this is really a loaded question. Now, if the leadership in the House is helping you in any way, are they supporting you? And if not, are they supporting someone else?
I'm not aware of the leadership efforts or any of the political committees from the party at large engaging in a race of an open primary with 18 candidates running. I'm unaware of it. The House Freedom Fund and the conservatives in the House are supporting me and helping me through the primary. They obviously hope that I'll be able to join them, and they know they can trust me to join them. So we've had really good response so far. We've been able to outraise my opponents in the field, which is crucial in order to get through a crowded primary. And look, I'll say this. You know, I've got lots of friends across the entire conference. Some are hardcore conservatives in the House Freedom Caucus. some are in the leadership and might be a little bit more establishment of people that I've known for years. You know, we have to be able to find ways to work with the entirety to move the ball forward. But what you need to do, and this is the key, you've got to let people know from the beginning where you stand and that it's non-negotiable in certain areas, and that certain areas are negotiable. The things that are non-negotiable for me, you know, that get back to my views of the size and scope of government, federalism, faith, those principles that need to guide your decision-making. We don't do enough, I think, as conservatives of holding that line. I'll give you one good example that I think your listeners will appreciate is Republicans patting themselves on the back with a CR deal 2 or 3 weeks ago to supposedly avoid the shutdown. In it was funding for Planned Parenthood. Mm-hmm. And everybody goes around saying, oh, how good we are that we put mm-hmm. this back on Chuck Schumer. Aren't we brilliant? But yet they busted the budget caps, funded a bloated health care CHIP program, and they funded Planned Parenthood. Let's be honest about what we're doing with the American people. Let's be honest about what we're actually doing to reduce the size and scope of Washington and honor our commitments to taxpayers not to fund abortion through Planned Parenthood.
Chip, do you feel that the fiscal stuff, and that's a big deal, and there aren't enough people who understand it in the House, do you feel like that's where your bailiwick, is that your center, or are there other issues where you feel that you have expertise or want to bring your expertise to them?
Sure. I mean, look, fiscal issues drive me because I think every one of the nefarious things in which the federal government is involved, if you strangle the dollars, you can win the argument. So my view at the end of the day is that if you follow the money, you can win. But on the key core substantive issues, I spent a great deal of my career working on immigration, fighting the amnesties of 2006, 2007, 2013, fighting a gun registry bill in 2013 in the wake of Sandy Hook when I was standing alongside Senator Cruz when I was his chief of staff. And there's a number of issues in my experience working on the Senate Judiciary Committee where I've got a deep background and knowledge, whether it's judicial confirmation, immigration, guns and constitutional rights, and I've served on the Senate's subcommittee on the Constitution. And then healthcare is the other area where I have a fairly deep knowledge and expertise, both because my own personal experience is going to the healthcare system, but also standing up with Senator Cruz to try to defund Obamacare in 2013, which I might add, the leadership was, you know, opposed to and saying, well, you know, this isn't something we can get done now. We'll figure this out later. And here we are 4 years later, and after 7 years of promises to repeal Obamacare, how many votes did the House of Representatives or the Senate have last year to fully repeal Obamacare? Zero.
Yeah,
they didn't have a single vote to fully repeal Obamacare last year.
Shame. It was shameful. Chip, we only have a couple of minutes left. If people are hearing you speak and they like what you're saying, how could they help you?
Thank you for asking. My website is chiproy, chiproy.com. We are in the throes of the campaign. We have less than 2 weeks to early voting, less than 4 weeks to the primary vote. Crowded field. Every dollar we get, whether it's $5 or $100 or more, helps us get our message out. Volunteers, if you live in, if any of your listeners are in the Central Texas area, we need block walkers, or we can take phone callers from all over. And just really praying that our leadership finds the resolve to stand up for the things they've campaigned on, and making sure that we continue to drive forward and give the president some better tools to keep trying to protect the people and reflect the values of the people.
Boy, that primary is coming up quick. And early voting, as you said, is February 20th, which is coming up more quickly. And early voting is becoming so important and unconstitutional from my perspective, but there it is. Early voting, February 20th. And the election is, or the primary is March the 6th, and of course the general election will be next November. But as I've said often, and I say this almost every day, you must get involved in the primaries, friends. You must get involved. Good men, good conservatives can only win if they win in the primaries, and that's when our votes count the most and our work counts the most. Chip Roy, candidate in District 21 in Texas. Chip, thank you so much for joining us this morning, and God bless your day and your family. Thank you so much for your service.
Sandy, thank you. Thanks for having me on, and thanks for what you do.
All right, my pleasure. All right, Sandy Rios, coming up next, we're going to go to Facebook and email and lots of news. Can we do all of that in one segment? Well, I'm going to try. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Zacchaeus, hurry and come down, for I must stay at your house today. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. When their mom passed, the Landau brothers of New Jersey had a garage sale to clear out their mom's house. But they decided to keep a few things, including mom's old creepy painting of a woman passed out in a chair and two men trying to revive her. Fast forward to their estate auction, and the brothers found themselves fielding bids from France and Germany for the painting. Turns out, it was a long-lost Rembrandt that ultimately sold for $1.1 million. A trained eye spots value where others don't.
Listen to the Hamilton Corner, weekdays from 5 to 6 p.m. Central on AFR. For more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
When it comes to the issue of trafficking, it's not just girls that we're talking about. Truth is that even boys are at risk.
Oh my God, we'd be on the bed doing wrong things.
In Mumbai, India, in the red light districts, there are young men like Najish.
I rolled over several times and broke many bones. This scar here on my forehead, this scar is from that night.
It happens every day, and it must stop. And it can. That is why American Family Radio and India Partners are teaming up to provide a safe house outside the city where young boys are rescued. With your gift of just $7.08, you provide a day of safety and shelter at a new India Partners safe house. Coming up here on American Family Radio, we're going to show you how your gifts can rescue a boy and make this new safe house a reality. Learn more at AFR.net.
Exposing Washington with Walker Wildman.
So who is responsible for the dysfunction in Washington? That's what we're going to be discussing today.
We have become one of the most litigious societies on the planet.
The goal of this show is to bring clarity to the news coming out of Washington, D.C., and to expose the deception that has plagued our nation's capital for decades.
Exposing Washington.
Each Saturday at 2:30 p.m. Central.
On American Family Radio.
For centuries, the Bible has inspired humanity and shaped the very world we live in. But how do we know this book is the Word of God and not merely the words of men?
What we believe about the Bible is based on what we believe about its source.
The God who speaks explores the evidence of the Bible's inspiration and authority through some of the world's most respected biblical scholars.
We have essentially a dual authorship. So it's true to say that Paul wrote Romans. It's equally true to say that God wrote Romans.
He says, we saw this, and that sets the Bible apart from almost everything else in the ancient world and its religious pantheon of gods and goddesses.
The God Who Speaks is a feature-length documentary from the American Family Association. Available now at thegodwhospeaks.org.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Newly released text messages between disgraced FBI agent Peter Strzok and his colleague and mistress Lisa Page have just directly implicated President Obama in one unfolding scandal. It seems he wanted to know everything about an investigation then underway into fraudulently alleged collusion between Donald Trump's 2016 campaign and Russia. Now the question occurs, what did Mr. Obama know and when did he know it about another scandal involving real collusion, namely his administration's approval of the sale of 20% of our uranium reserves to Kremlin-tied Russian interests? That's one takeaway from published reports about testimony provided yesterday to the staff of three congressional committees by William Campbell, a former FBI undercover source whose warnings of criminal conspiracies implicating Hillary and Bill Clinton were not allowed to impede that transaction. But we need the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. Yes, India Partners is our partner for this week, always actually, but this week is a special emphasis. And we're trying to raise money for a safe house for little boys who are sexually trafficked in Mumbai. Last year, we were able to build with your money a brand new girls, I don't know if it was brand new, but they acquired a girls' safe house for the girls that were coming out of trafficking. Boys and girls as young as 8 are being trafficked and sold in red light areas of Mumbai, India. And we know how that goes. Many of the girls become mothers when they're just kids themselves. If you want to help India Partners, which not only gives them practical help with shelter and food and all the rest of it, they also teach them about Jesus and redemption, which is the best part ever. And so if you'd like to help, have your credit card ready when you call 877-616-2396, 877-616-2396, or you can give online to India Partners at AFR.net. That's AFR.net. I also want to mention, practically speaking, that there is American Decency. Bill Johnson's organization is having their special meetings with Steve Coughlin and our guest yesterday about Sharia law in Michigan. It's just an amazing story. They will be holding the first one Friday night at the American Decency Association in Fremont, Saturday morning in Grand Rapids at the Prince Conference Center. That's Calvin College. And if you want more information, email Kimberly at AmericanDecency.org, Kimberly at AmericanDecency.org. All right, I got an email from, now where is this? Nope, this ain't email. Okay, I got an email from David, and this is what he said. He was on his way to work listening, and he heard me say that Adam Schiff's sister was married to George Soros' son. And he said he checked on it and found out it wasn't true. I was sucked into the fake news of the day and shocked that you didn't vet your source. And so he said you perpetuated a lie and it doesn't speak well for you. And so, David, I did say that, and it did turn out not to be true, and I just haven't had a chance to correct it, and I don't mind you bringing that to my attention, by the way. You know, I make every effort to make sure that what I say to you is true, and I do vet my sources, trust me. I have great sources, but of course, not everything can be perfect. And in this case, it looks like there was a Melissa Schiff that married George Soros' son. And the original outlet on this, the one I read was Truth Feed. That was the one that was sent to me by someone that's normally very careful. His son's wife's name is also Melissa Schiff. And so there was confusion over that, and that's why it was reported. And I apologize for that. Someone else weighed in and said something about I should... look, I have to, the only way I can be sure I'm speaking the truth to you is because I trust the people that I work with. They're not liars. They're very careful. But this was wrong. Somebody misunderstood, thought that his sister, Melissa, was married to George Soros' son. It turns out it wasn't his sister at all. Adam Schiff doesn't have a sister. But let me tell you the most important part of the story, and that is that Adam Schiff is completely linked with George Soros, whether he has a sister that married his son or not. And just to give you, I did touch on some of it when I mentioned this the other day, and that was the George Soros MoveOn.org was what poured money into him winning his congressional seat. It was a big race. Jim Rogan out of California, who was on the House managers that impeached President Clinton, was a target of the left, and George Soros poured a ton of money into that. Schiff was also some sort of a fellow, they call it, a Toll Fellowship, which he credits with, that's supported by George Soros. And Schiff credits that time with the Toll Fellowship as training him to deal with the media, et cetera. And there's a lot more, too. The connection between George Soros and Adam Schiff. I will recommend to you an article by Aaron Klein called Representative Adam Schiff's Congressional Career Aided by Soros-Financed Groups. And so that, to me, is the most important part of the story. Whether his sister was married to George Soros' son is the secondary thing. But it's important to always get things right. And I was going to correct that today anyway. So David gave me a chance to do a shout out to him and do it at the same time. So anytime you catch me saying something that you find out is not accurate, you have my full permission. I would want to know, for heaven's sake. I don't want to. In my inbox after after that came through, someone else then came in yesterday and questioned the validity, but I was already off the air, so I couldn't correct it till this morning. So there you go. Okay. there's so much going on. I think I'm going to go to Griff Jenkins because this is a new report from just yesterday, and I've told you about this situation. I've told you about the Uranium One scandal, about us giving up 20% of our uranium to the Russians. I told you about Hillary Clinton and Eric Holder and others serving on that committee that signed off on that decision. I've told you that there was a businessman who was an undercover operative for the, I think it's the FBI, who has been, was tracking with the Russians. It might've been CIA. I'm not sure. Tracking with the Russians for years. He's got a bucket load, a truckload of evidence. And here's the kicker. The money that was in all this, another complicated situation. All these things are in spy intrigue. The money primarily was part of the money in the deal making was to go to the Clinton Foundation. This is the huge scandal. Mrs. Clinton signed off on the deal for 20% of America's uranium sources to go to the Russians. Meanwhile, in the process of making this deal, the Russians are making sure money goes to the Clinton Foundation. That's as simple as I know how to make it. Here's Griff Jenkins' report on it.
That informant's name, by the way, is Douglas Campbell, and in written testimony obtained by the Hill newspaper, he says Russian nuclear officials told him that Moscow hired an American lobbying firm named APCO Worldwide for $3 million in hopes of influencing then-Secretary of State Hillary Clinton through contributions to the Clinton Foundation. Campbell writes in testimony, quote, the contract called for four payments of $750,000 over 12 months. APCO was expected to give assistance free of charge to the Clinton Global Initiative as part of their effort to create a favorable environment to ensure the Obama administration made affirmative decisions on everything from Uranium One to the U.S.-Russia Civilian Nuclear Cooperation Agreement. Campbell's attorney, Victoria Tunsing, told Hannity this all began in 2005.
That was when, guess what, Bill Clinton, former president, and his multi-gazillionaire friend Frank Jufra traveled to Kazakhstan and bestowed all kinds of praises on the dictator there and ended up, oh my surprise, with uranium mining rights. And it was then, my client is told, that the Russians began to plan strategically how they could take over uranium, particularly in the United States. And one of the key elements of that plan was to get the CFIUS approval to buy Uranium One.
Now, APCO Worldwide is denying any involvement with Uranium One and says their work with the Clinton Foundation and Russia are not connected. A Clinton spokesperson says Campbell's testimony is merely a distraction from the Mueller investigation, and Democrats are calling for Campbell's testimony to be released. Look for a fight, guys, here coming on this as Democrats are casting real doubt on Campbell's testimony.
Well, they can't. I can tell you right now, he testified before three committees yesterday, and he is as solid as a rock. And again, he's got a truckload of evidence on this, literally. He's been keeping track. He's got documents. He's got tapes. And so it's going to be really hard for them to discredit him. And when Gloria just mentioned, and Victoria, in that sound clip, she mentioned the CIFA. That's the committee. That is the acronym for the committee that Mrs. Clinton and Eric Holder and others sat on. And I might also weave into this again, I've mentioned this before, but Rod Rosenstein was involved in this as the U.S. District Attorney in Maryland. So there is a lot, this is the, you can't even imagine the corruption that we're dealing with here. I will probably come back to the uranium story next week. But let me just say that we'll put one story on our Facebook page, Uranium One Informant Makes Clinton Allegations in Testimony. It's by John Solomon. I think it's in The Hill. I think that's the outlet. But anyway, we will put that on our Facebook page, and you can read it for yourselves, and we will come back to that at a later date. Where to start? All right, let's listen to Catherine Herridge's report, the latest on the scandals we're already familiar with. Let's listen to Catherine.
In then FBI Director Comey's July 2016 recommendation against criminal charges, the early draft said emails between Clinton and President Obama had probably been compromised by hackers. A week before Comey publicly closed the case, Strzok and others, including his boss, Bill Priestap, head of FBI counterintelligence, watered down the language. Strzok writes, "Hope so. Just left Bill Priestap. He changed president to another senior government official. The reference was then removed altogether." After the election, both Page and Strzok texted about being depressed. In mid-November, Page writes, "I bottled the president's men, figure I needed to brush up on Watergate." The next day, Page follows up. God being here makes me angry. Lots of highfalutin national security talk. Meanwhile, we have our task ahead of us. Senate investigators question whether there's a connection to this August text, where the two discuss an insurance policy. While Strzok and Page are no longer assigned to Special Counsel Robert Mueller's probe, the White House press secretary said their reservations remain.
It just further shows that there is a reason for all of us to have great cause for concern in this process.
All right, there's more to that story, but let me just say, bottom line, it looks as though the FBI in Comey's statement exonerating Hillary Clinton made other changes, and they deleted the any reference to President Obama. They changed his name from a president to another senior government official, trying to keep him out of this. And, of course, his name has been notably absent from this story, but trust me, he wasn't absent. We know that now from those email. Back to the uranium scandal, just to refresh your memory, uranium is a key natural ingredient to making a nuclear weapon. That's why the Russians want our supply of it. And so that's how, you ask me, you tell me where the collusion was. You tell me where the collusion with the Russians was and which candidate the Russians may have wished would win. All right, so I'm going to leave that with that, but I have to tell you a bunch of other things. Please don't be discouraged, because I'm hearing some incredible things. First of all, the man I just told you about, who's got all this information on the uranium scandal. You can't silence a man like that. Oh, you can. You could kill him, I guess, but the evidence still stands. And he, by the way, has had his life threatened. And so this is the way this goes. But there are brave men and some women serving us faithfully. Let me just say that in regard to the FISA court, it's my understanding, remember, that's the secret court that the FBI went inside and presented this fake dossier, this tabloid dossier, to make an excuse for surveilling Trump operatives. There's a lot to say about that. Let me just say that they were already spying on the Trump camp long before that dossier was presented. This was a cover for the efforts that they were already making. And this is a widespread thing. State Department, John Brennan, others, my understanding is that they were involved in all of this too. But now the FISA court is the focus of some. Chairman Goodlatte, the House Judiciary Committee chairman, is now asking for documents from the FISA court. The FISA court, my understanding is that these they are quite upset themselves by having been manipulated by information, because they have trusted the FBI in the past, and we don't even know who else went to the FISA court and asked for warrants yet. We just know about the FBI. So they're quite upset. And the presiding judge is Rosemary Collier. And I found out that the judge that sat before the Flynn case, he has a Spanish name, Contreras, I think is his name, this presided over the Flynn procedure where Flynn pled guilty, was also a FISA court judge. And a few days after General Flynn appeared before him, he resigned or was suddenly absent from the case. I find out now that he was removed forcibly. And we think that, look, this is not verified, so I'll tell you this up front, but it's possible that Judge Contreras may have been the judge in the FISA court that was authorizing all of these wiretaps. It's possible that he may have been the one. Now, look, I don't know that. This is speculation on my part. But I'm just telling you, the wheels are coming off the bus of the stories and the collusion of the left to try to destroy Donald Trump in this way. That doesn't mean they won't manage. Trust me, they won't quit until they've succeeded. They've had a lot of successes. But the information is coming like a flood. And I just ask you to be active listeners, active participants, responsible citizens. We post a lot of things on the Facebook page for you. Share with others so that you can make the case. And I try to make it manageable so that you can have a grasp. And we'll continue to do that. All right. So Sandy Rios, by the way, in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.